The Disney Brit Podcast is sponsored by Attraction Tickets Direct and Complete Orlando. At Attraction Tickets Direct, they recognise that people nowadays want to be free from package holiday restrictions and to avoid paying prices inflated by travel agent commission. Because they don't sell through travel agents, they are able to offer attraction tickets at unbeatable prices and offer expert advice. Furthermore, the service they provide is second to none since their lines are open 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 7 days a week. Customers receive their tickets within 7 days and there are no hidden extras such as credit card fees or postage surcharges. You can call them on 0800 975 0002 or visit www.attraction-tickets-direct.co.uk. Complete Orlando are here to help simplify your Orlando holiday. They specialise solely in arranging holidays to Orlando and can therefore provide you with an expert advice and knowledge on this magical destination. They have expert staff available 7 days a week and can personalise your whole itinerary using their range of hotels, private villas and apartments to suit all budgets, as well as car rental, scheduled flights, theme park tickets and travel insurance. Their whole range can be totally tailor-made to offer complete flexibility and fit your individual requirements. Call them on 0800 294 8844 or visit www.completeorlando.co.uk. Make sure to check out Attraction Tickets Direct current offers. With every child Disney ticket purchased, get a free exclusive Disney autograph book. Purchase any Orlando Flexi ticket or Discovery Cove ticket with your Attraction Tickets Direct tickets and they'll give you a free Boggy Creek airboat ride. A 14-day ticket, the Disney Ultimate ticket, is available for the price of a 7-day ticket. There's no strings attached. And of course, over at Complete Orlando, book your Orlando holiday this summer and you'll enjoy free Disney dining plus 14 fantastic days in the Disney parks for the price of 7.
Ah, salam and good evening to you, worthy friend. Please, please, come closer.
Too close, a little too close.
This is Julie Andrews. Once upon a time, there was a magic kingdom made of hopes and childhood fantasies. A timeless place where every land was filled with wonder. A place where everyone who entered its gates would be given the gift of the young at heart. The power to wish upon a star and unlock its magic. Are you ready to wish upon a star? Then it's time to open your heart and remember, dreams come true.
Hello and welcome to episode 14 of the Disney Brit Podcast for Wednesday, the 29th of April. I am recording this having only just come back from Disneyland Paris, so we're going to have some fantastic Disneyland Paris content for you. We're going to start off with our usual news and rumours segment, and then we're going to move on to this month's trivia quiz. We then are going to bring you an interview. I was lucky enough to go backstage at the Buffalo Bill Wild West show down in Disney Village, where I met Trent Vance, who is the main Buffalo Bill at the show there, and is going to bring you the first of a two-part interview. We're then going to bring you the top seven must-sees, the results of the top seven must-sees of the rest of Walt Disney World, and then we're going to bring you a very special trivia contest where you can win some fantastic prizes. Then we're just going to round up the end of the show with some information for you and some announcements, and that's pretty much the show for episode 14. So without any further ado, let's get on with the show.
Good morning, sire.
Good morning, Zazu.
Checking in? with the morning report.
Fire away.
The news and rumours section for this this week's show, and Juz joins me.
Morning, Adam. Morning. Disney people.
We are talking to you from Newport Bay Club. As you know, we're out in Disneyland Resort Paris, and we're currently looking over Lake Disney. It's a lovely, lovely morning here. And what we thought we'd do is to bring you the news for this month, really. We're going to start off over in Walt Disney World, and there's some interesting things that have happened, and a new offering over at Disney's Grand Floridian. I'll just read you sort of what the press release says, and it says that there's a lot more... Get it?
Yeah.
New fun in store at the Disney's Grand Floridian Resort and Spa each evening when guests staying at the resort can roast marshmallows under a Mickey-shaped campfire, sing favourite camp songs on the shore of Seven Seas Lagoon and see the stars, both on the silver screen and in the sky. As they watch a family-friendly Disney movie on the moonlit beach, small kits and marshmallows are available for purchase during the campfire and movie. For more information, you can obviously contact Grand Floridian. Go to DisneyWorld.com. or call 407-824-4321. So this is just basically the same as what you get over at Wilderness, except for it's just for Grand Floridian guests.
Yeah, I think we commented on it quite a bit heavily on the Fort Wilderness one, didn't we? So this is really, as you say, what they've done is say, oh, this is really popular, let's do it elsewhere.
And it's a bit more exclusive as well than the fact that you can only do it if you're staying in Grand Floridian.
Because there's going to be a pass scheme, so if you haven't got a pass, go away. You can't see the movie.
I don't know how it works, with it, especially being out on the beach.
Yeah.
Which is quite easily accessible by anyone. So, it'd be interesting to see how they work that. The bad news is the next bit of news isn't great. Price increases for 2010 have been announced. These price increases are not particularly great, unfortunately. Each of the Disney resorts has got some sort of price increase for UK visitors, going from as little as 11% up to as much as 46.7%. Give you some idea. This year, the All-Star Music was £728. Next year, it's going to be £924. Beach Club this year, this is, I can't remember what exactly this is based on, but if you were to stay in the Beach Club, £2,366, next year will cost you
£3,472.
Bargain. Yeah, we'll go all the time. So there's a massive, massive price increase, and I'm surprised with all the offers they've been doing and with the issues they've been having with getting people to go, that suddenly they're still going to whack the price of each of the hotels up.
They do it every year, and you think, recession time now, certain things are dropping a bit, just freeze it 1 year. Mm. It seems to me like, because they've dropped a bit in certain areas, they decide, oh, let's push it up to make sure shareholders are happy and not going public. And, you know, we're all thinking about where we need to go.
Yes.
The state it is now, even if things get better next year, you could probably see a price increase, perhaps 211, but not a year where we're still just clawing our way out of it. The utmost saying to the, especially to the UK guests, is, do you know what, don't even bother coming next year.
Yeah, I'd say it's a massive increase. One of the interesting things with this, though, is that the All-Star Music and Sport, which is always cheaper than the All-Star Movies, which I find really bizarre, is coming in line with Pop Century. Pop Century and the All-Star Sports and Music are going to be the same price.
Yeah.
£924.
Because
it's based on 2 weeks, by the way.
It's a special offers, isn't it, that happens around. I think I've seen a reduction in the quality we've got out of things like the annual pass and stuff like that. You can't get as good a deal off the rack crates. And I'd be curious to know if it goes up, but they're going to continue more special offers to offset it, then it might be good.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see whether they increase the offers because they're increasing the price.
Yeah, or it's like car manufacturers' prices, you would never pay that.
No, and the likelihood is you get these a lot cheaper than they are on here, if you really do look around and have a look at what's going on. Attendance news for Walt Disney World then. They have released now the 2008 attendance, and obviously they were concerned about how many people are going to the park. Well, Magic Kingdom still takes top spot, with about 17 million visitors in 2008. Epcot is third with 11 million, so that's dropped to sixth worldwide. In fourth place, and this is in the US, Hollywood Studios, 9.6 million. They're seventh in the world. Fifth is Animal Kingdom with 9.5 million, so they're now eighth in the world. Both water parks, they take the spot one and two. Typhoon Lagoon's in the first, and Blizzard Beach is second. And that's also the same for the worldwide water park attendance.
It's bizarre that, though, is the fact that Typhoon Lagoon has been the one of the last 2 years, has gone down for rehab for about 3 months.
Yes.
Yet they're still outclassing Blizzard Beach, is it, on that figure?
They are, yeah. They're just about out.
Even though they're only open 9 months.
Yeah, it's a small, small amount, that the difference between the two. But, yeah, it's interesting that they're Typhoon Lagoon is still number one. But I did say there that Magic Kingdom's obviously first and Epcot's third, which means something snuck in second place, which we'll come to in a second.
Legoland.
Old Town. No. Let's go into the parks, then. Let's first start off over at Magic Kingdom. And Toontown Fair, I don't know about you, but I quite often go to Toontown Fair and always think that they've really undersold it. There's a lot more they can do in there than that actually exists.
It's not that much, is it?
No, well, there are rumours that they're planning to renovate Toontown Fair, and this area is going to become more of a standard just Toontown theme, very much like they have over in Disneyland. The reason for the move, we don't really know if they do actually do this, but they're going to obviously try to expand and widen pathways in the area due to crowding issues, because I know one of the things there is such narrow pathways in, that they're looking at expanding that. But possible overhaul of Toontown could be quite interesting to see if this is one of the things they're going to do for the 40th.
Probably needs to do something down there. I mean, you can literally, you know, walk down there, but the crowding, bizarrely enough, tends to be cutting out shoulders down there, visiting the characters. And even if it made just more of a, you know, you don't need rides there, just more of a kiddie character type area, I think it'd be a winner.
Things like, because they've got Roger's Toontown Spin in, cartoon spin, isn't it, in Disneyland. It'd be interesting to see something like that come over. There's not been enough of Roger Rabbit recently, in my opinion, to be honest.
Let's move on.
Stitches Supersonic Celebration. We've nearly finished. It's nearly open, I promise. Disney have now confirmed that this show will run six times a day. So the date is still the same, around the 10th of May that it's going to open. But Disney have now confirmed the show will run six times a day. So I'm just sort of looking forward to this opening now to see whether it's actually going to be any good or not. I'm hoping it is. Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique has been going for some time now and has proved to be very, very popular in the Disney resorts. And there's always been this question of, well, what's for the boys? Are Disney ever going to do anything for the boys? Well, it seems that Disney have decided they're going to create a Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique-style experience that is going to be pirate-themed, and it's going to be within the Pirates of the Caribbean gift shop area that's been closed for some time. There's an area that they don't use anymore, and they're going to now turn this into something sort of going to be, well, currently being titled the Pirates League. Whether it will stay the same, I don't know. But like I said, it's going to be built in that part of the gift shop, and the experience is going to be less about, obviously, hair and makeup, and it's going to focus more on costume and accessories. There's also going to be the opportunity for them to have things like pirate and swordsmanship training while they're in there as well. This experience is set to open around June, July of this year. So again, it's another piece of news that's come quite late on in the processes and creating.
The area they've had where you can get Captain Jack's hat and then go around the bit and add all your bits to it and then end up with a bill for about $90. That has been incredibly busy every time you go down there. So this just makes complete sense of the next way to go forward.
Yeah.
And they're doing it perfectly because you go, well, let's send our daughter there as a special treat and send our son there as a special treat. And double the amount of money coming in.
Yeah, it's about time that something came in here for the boys. I would guess the price tag is going to be something similar to that. Everybody, probably.
It worries me letting my kids have some kind of swordsmanship practice.
Yeah, swordsmanship training would be interesting. But that opens June, July, so I'll definitely have a look at that when I'm out there. Let's move over to Epcot then. Epcot's released the acts that they're going to be performing at the Sounds Like Summer Music Revival that's going to be going on over at the American Garden stage. It's going to be going on between June the 15th and August the 9th. The concerts are going to be as part of your theme park admission. And it's going to be happening nightly on at 5:45, 7 and 8:15, except for July the 4th, where the show is going to be 5:15, 6:30, 7:45 and 9 o'clock. The following groups then. So June the 15th and 21st, you've got Stayin' Alive, which is obviously a Bee Gees. In fact, I should try and get you to guess who these bands are. See how good you are. So we've got Stayin' Alive, yeah? June 22nd to 28th is Hotel California.
Beach Boys.
Eagles. Good try. June 29th to July the 8th is Slippery When Wet.
Bon Jovi.
Yeah, then Bon Jovi. Give me a tribute to Bon Jovi. That's easy one, this one. July the 9th to the 19th, Bjorn again.
Bucks Fizz, definitely.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. No, tribute to ABBA. July 20th to the 26th, The Sound of the Supremes.
Supremes.
Need to guess that one. July the 27th to August the 2nd is 2U.
U2.
2U, just turned it around. And then, while I'm out there, August the 3rd to the 9th, I thought, oh, brilliant, go and see something. And it's Petty Theft, which is a tribute to Tom Petty. I have no idea who Tom Petty is.
It's a singer. Can I just say, I've been out and watched Bjorn again at Epcot, and they were brilliant. It was absolutely, it's something that, you know, we were walking past at the time, and we sat down, we spent the hour there, and it was great fun.
Okay, let's move ourselves into interventions. And there's a new Robocop yeah, coming to Epcot's intervention. As we spoke about, Raytheon is building a new attraction called the Sum of All Thrills. And as part of that, they're going to be creating this customised ride-in sort of roller coaster. But it's not going to be like a general roller coaster with a trap and things like that. It's actually going to be a robo arm. Very much like you see, they use them in Finding Nemo within the clamshells within the Living Seas to operate some of the mechanics inside. It seems that they're going to be turning this into a coaster. It's going to be a little bit like you'll have a seat on the end, you'll have a screen in front of you. I think this is the idea, and that you're going to have a go at creating your own coaster. It's a little bit like Disney Quest-ish. But the idea is that you're going to have to use mathematics and things to create it. And according to this, in one of the newsletters to cast members, it says, we put the outline of a hill on the table and give the guests a physical protractor and ruler. Okay? By simply dragging their finger along the protractor, they can change the angle of the hill, and using the ruler, alter its height. Add the right amount of energy to the equation, and guests have created their very own experience. So,
are they trying to put education into Epcot?
Yes, can you believe it? That's scheduled to open late in 2009. Just one more bit of news then for Walt Disney World. That is in Downtown Disney, and Lanuba is closing down from May the 18th to June the 1st for its usual refurbishments. So if you are going out between May the 18th and June the 1st, don't try and go buy tickets for Lanuba. They're not going to be open. Okay. Disneyland Paris then. We would normally jump on a plane and fly over to Disneyland Paris. We've already done that. It's not looking very sunny this morning.
But it's looking incredibly beautiful across the lake.
It is looking lovely across the lake, but it's not looking very sunny at the moment. Hopefully it will be soon. Disney Village then, let's start off there. Just was pointing, for those of you who are listening to the podcast. Disney Village has been undergoing some changes over the past few years, and they've got rid of the lights across that used to come across the top of Disney Village. There were these large sort of podiums that have now gone. The DJs seem to have gone. The stage is gone. They now have the big screen, which the football was on last night, and they have all of those things. And they've now removed yet another thing, and it's the carousel. The small carousel that stood by the side of Rainforest Cafe seems to have disappeared. It seems to have completely vanished. I don't think it's a bad thing, to be honest. I think because of this fact that it cost you to go on anyway, and there's a carousel that's much, much bigger and much better in the park that's free, but yet they still have this carousel in Disney Village.
I thought it always looked tacky, but I have a nagging feeling it's probably going to reappear. It's probably gone somewhere else.
It might do, but walking through Disney Village yesterday evening, we did look at some of the changes that are going on. It seems that the where the old Buffalo Bill's cowboy shop was, that's now completely boarded over. Like, they've got a screen over that. It looks like, you know, Starbucks may actually be coming.
And we couldn't see anything going on, though.
Couldn't see anything going on.
Completely closed off that.
But I think that's probably on its way. So Starbucks is coming there. The bar is now open at King Ludwig's. That looks really great.
It did look nice.
And they are doing a lot of work to it, and hopefully that's going to continue to improve and continue to sort itself out. I've had an email from several people, actually, recently, in the past couple of weeks, saying, the Mickey's Magical Party music, we really like it. Where can we get hold of it? And I sort of had to email back saying, I'm sorry, you just can't. We're able to get hold of it. We're really lucky. But you're not able to get hold of it. Well, I'm actually wrong, because in the past sort of week and a half, Disney have never now released the Mickey's Magical Party Time on CD. It's available from the Disney, obviously the Disney Resort. It's also available through mail order. It costs €5.50 and contains three tracks. It contains the Mickey's Magical Party original music. It contains the Mickey's Magical Party instrumental music. And it also contains the Mickey's Magical Party remix. So it's got three tracks on there for £5.50.
And it comes in a cardboard pack.
It does come in a cardboard pack, yeah.
I was looking at them yesterday.
You know, £5.50 is nothing, isn't it?
Do you know what?
That's what a lot of stuff costs.
It's nothing, but the two stores I've seen it in was when I've been loitering around the back area. They've not put it in a prominent position. No. I think you, as you say, £5.50, put it right next to the till in a prominent position with a, this is the music you've listened to, and it will fly out. But they've sort of just pushed it on the side.
They have, yeah. So we might try and, I think should we try and pick one up and do one as a, we could do it a little bit of a competition, couldn't we?
Well, do you think we should pay for it rather than just pick it up?
Well, we'll do that.
Okay.
Right. So let's move on. As I was talking earlier in the news section about attendance for Walt Disney World, attendance obviously for European theme parks has also appeared. Disney have retained their top spot as the leading European theme park destination, with 12,688,000 people coming to the Disneyland park, 6.8%. That means they are second in the world. So,
incredible,
to reach that is fantastic. But this is the interesting thing. 12.6, nearly 12.7 million people have come to the Disneyland Park. But Walt Disney Studios, which is literally 5 minutes walk across the open sort of courtyard area, 2.6 million, which means a massive 10 million seem to disappear in transition from one park to the other and just don't seem to make their way over.
Yeah, the funny thing about this, because Disney obviously monitors this all the time, is this explains why the amount of work that's going on in the studios now is they're obviously sitting there going, hang on, you know, we're hitting capacity at one, and they have done recently hit the capacity, yet the other is a tiny fraction of that.
And it just shows you, actually, that if they're only getting 2.6 million people in a year, and Crush's Coaster is still queues for up to 2 hours
That's where they're going.
That actually, even for 2 million people going in, there's still not quite enough.
Well, I think any American who came across would be shocked to know that you can go into the studios and virtually walk on every time to Rock and Roller Coaster.
Yeah. Yeah,
because Crush is horrendous, but Rock and Roller Coaster, as long as it's not breaking down continually, you can literally just walk on and off it.
Yeah, really can. So that means that Walt Disney Studios is remaining in ninth place in the European theme park. It means that Disney Studios doesn't actually appear at all in the top 25 in the world, but it does leave Disneyland Park fourth in the world, and out of all the parks, it means that MK is first, Magic Kingdom is first in Walt Disney World, Disneyland second, Tokyo Disneyland third, and then Disneyland Park here fourth in the world. So that's not bad.
Some achievement, that,
isn't it? Bearing in mind how many problems they were supposed to have had. Rumour for inside the Disneyland Park itself, there's been talk about, you know, what's going to come up for the 20th anniversary. It's only 3 years away. That means if they're going to be building something big, it's going to need to be fairly soon. They're going to need to start working on it. And an old rumour seems to have resurfaced, and some concept art or plans seem to have resurfaced as well, that there's a thought that the Grizzly River Run, as of Disneyland California, with DCA, may be coming to the Disneyland Park. That or possibly Splash Mountain. Now, there were concepts drawn up when the park first opened, and Grizzly River Run was originally part of that. And these are the ones that seem to have resurfaced. Now, when I look to the map, I can tell that they're old. They're probably a good 12 years old, these ones that are right, because A, the Chaparral Theatre is still open air, and Pocahontas is in there, and there's still a petting zoo in the place of where this roundup now is. So it seems that these drawings that have resurfaced, maybe old ones. Now, it may be that they're still just using those drawings as
an idea
and as a basis. Because the idea is they're going to put the Grizzly River Run, or Splash Mountain, which they put, behind the railroad station in Frontierland. I think it fits well with the theme.
Yeah, judging by the weather today, I mean, we spoke about this yesterday, so my concern was the fact that I would never go on a water ride here. You'd just never dry out. And I think you were saying that they actually got a winter setting, haven't they?
Yeah, Grizzly River Run has a winter and a summer setting, which is basically they turn the waves down a bit.
So I think if it did it, we'd probably end up something like that, where you don't get wet, no winter setting.
Yeah.
Big hit.
I'd be interested to see whether this is something that Disney have resurfaced to try and gauge people's reaction, or whether it's just a rumour. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see what comes out of it.
Just build a massive indoor water centre would be good.
Yes, well, Lava Lagoon should have been here when the park first opened and never arrived, unfortunately. Talking about other rumours, we've mentioned over the past probably couple of months now the Toy Story Playland rumour, which seems to have been partially confirmed. And what I say partially is because Disney have not actually confirmed anything themselves, but there is a law here in France that says if you're going to build anything, you need to advertise the construction first. You need to let people know that it's coming. And round sort of the back side of...
water.
Around the back of Walt Disney Studios, they have an area that's sort of a little road that's down by sort of Rock and Roller Coaster. Mm-hmm. You can access it if you know where it is. And they have a sign there which had up on it about the Studio Tram Tour having the path rerouted. And it now seems that there is a new sign that's been added to it. And it reads the following. Are you ready?
It's all French coming. Oh, here we go. I've had this all weekend so far.
Implantation de manager extérieur.
There we go.
Thank you.
That's good.
Which roughly translates as installation of 3 outdoor rides.
So if we bid on it, then we can find out what's going on.
Yeah. Oh, I reckon so. So, although, say, Disney have not confirmed it, it's, I suppose, a little bit of cat is out of the bag. You know, we've known that there are possibly 3 attractions coming to Toy Story Playland. The blue fencing is up. They've rerouted the tram tour. They've now put construction signs up to say that, we're building 3 outdoor rides. I think it's just now a matter of Disney holding their hands up and saying, yeah, OK, you've caught us. We are building Toy Story Playland. We're going to announce it now. I think it's looking fairly likely that Toy Story Playland is coming.
It's going to be a huge addition, and it ties into the figures that have been released, you see.
It does. It really does. And hopefully, that's just one more thing that's going to add to the park until something else comes along and that park starts to extend a bit more. Many US podcasters, as much as we love them all, and we do, and I know you're listening, that... Remy is gone from Disneyland Paris and is now over in Epcot. And when I heard it, I thought, no, surely not. Well, actually, he's not. Remy is still here, thank goodness. It seems that they've recreated another Remy.
You can't recreate Remy.
You can't, well, no, there's only one.
You're saying there's 2 Remys?
No, there's only one.
Santa? Where are you going with this?
There is, Remy is still in what is now the Restaurant des Stars, which was the originally Rendezvous des Stars. And he still sort of wanders the resort. He is also still in Epcot. He's going to be in Epcot until September.
Perhaps he flies backwards and forwards.
I think he does. Yeah. So you are able to see him in Disneyland Paris, and then when he's gone for a rest in Disneyland Paris, he'll be out in Epcot. There you go. We bring the magic.
And take it away.
And take it away too. Okay, final thing for you. Somebody over on Disney Central Plaza, a member known as McFly is his name. I hope so. It'd be great if it is. Has reported a possible change to the Batlight Express restaurant over there. I quite like the Batlight Express restaurant, but I do think that sometimes you go in and it just looks deserted and very, very empty. It's never really...
Which is why I like it.
Which is nice, but sometimes they have bands in there as well, the jazz bands and things like that. But it seems that it's going to have a bit of an overhaul. It's reported that there's going to be 3 themed rooms that are going to come to this Batlight Express. So I think it's still going to be along the same idea of it being sort of a prop shop. But we're going to have 3 rooms that are going to be possibly a Pirates of the Caribbean room.
Cool.
A Chronicles of Narnia room.
Cool.
And a High School Musical room.
Okay, so there's 2 rooms.
So yeah, 3 possible themed rooms for the Batlight Express restaurant. Obviously, it's designed to be a props warehouse. There's 1,000 things all over the place. There's bits for... There's something from James Bond in there.
There is everything. But it is a bit cluttered, though.
Very cluttered. So I wonder whether, this is trying to bring some sort of sense to it all. It'd be quite nice to have these themed rooms in there.
I bring a lot more punters in.
Thank you, probably.
Definitely.
Well, that pretty much rounds up the news. Like I say, it wasn't going to be as much this time. But if you've got any news or any comments you want to send in, then please do send them to disneybrit@hotmail.com. We'll make sure we reply to your emails, as always. So until the next time we come to the news, that's it. We're stood... currently in Videopolis at the new Cinema Mickey. Currently Steamboat Willie on, which is looking pretty good. But it's looking a little bit different in here, isn't it? Because it seems that although the Lion King set is still on stage, the actual animals in the eating area disappeared.
Yeah, it's really dead bizarre, isn't it? I mean, is it, as you say, the stage is still completely intact with the cinema screen put in the middle of it with curtains to actually fill it out. But you can still see the trees from the Lion King set right behind the curtain.
Yeah, everything still seems to be intact. The sort of all the lighting and the sound equipment still up at the back as well. All the food areas still open. And the interesting thing is that people are actually watching cartoons. There's actually people sat down. I wasn't sure whether this was going to be something that people were like, might do. Maybe, you know, if it was quiet or something like that. But there's quite a few people actually sat watching.
I'll be honest with you, a lot of people sat here. I seem to be eating their own sandwiches, though, don't they?
Yeah, they do, yeah.
It looks like you're just here to be somewhere to perhaps come and eat your own sandwiches and stuff.
But it looks like, you know, they thought about it. The classic cartoon's on. Mickey comes on at the beginning. He doesn't come on stage, but you can hear his voice, and they actually put the translation on the side screens. But they're proper classic characters. It's almost like we've got a Main Street cinema on a larger scale.
It is, but I'll be honest with you, it's looking very empty compared to what it normally is, isn't it?
What time is it now? I say it's now 5:01, so it is lunchtime.
And the rest of the park has been incredibly busy.
It is, it's been extremely busy. I say we've just queued for Pirates for a good 20, 25 minutes, which is something I've never done before. So it's looking quite busy. But I'd quite like to sit down and watch some cartoons, but we've got lots of stuff to do.
So. Space Mountain.
Welcome to the 10th edition of the Disney Brit Trivia Quiz. We are going to bring you the questions for this month's quiz. And, of course, we're going to bring you the answers on the next show. So, same as always, we have 8 questions for you, each getting progressively harder, each worth more points. Question 1, 100 points, 2, 200 points, etc. All the way up to question 8 for 800 points. So, make sure you've got everybody around, everybody ready, so you can all take part in the quiz. And let's start off with question 1 of this month's Disney Brit Trivia Quiz. Okay, so let's start off at question 1 then. So question 1 for 100 points is this. What is the name of the first ever feature-length animated movie made by Walt Disney? So, what is the name of the first ever feature-length animated movie made by Walt Disney? Question 2, then, for 200 points. Miley Cyrus is also known as which TV character? So, for 200 points, Miley Cyrus is also known as which TV character? Then 300 points. What was the name of Disney's first ever water park? So question 3, that's 300 points. What was the name of Disney's first ever water park? For 400 points. In which Disney TV film, ride or attraction would you find Robin Williams and Rhea Perlman? So in which Disney TV film, ride or attraction would you find Robin Williams, and Rhea Perlman? Question 5 for 500 points then. In which Walt Disney World location can you order a No Way Jose? So in which Walt Disney World location can you order a No Way Jose? Question 6 then, 600 points. In which Disney location would you find Beverly? So in which Disney location would you find Beverly? Question 7 for 700 points then. We're getting a lot harder now. Who sang the title song to the 2007 update of O Canada? So who sang the title song to the 2007 update of O Canada? Question 8, then, for 800 points. This is the really tough one for this month. Who was Scoop Sanderson? Who did he work for? And where could you find him? So, question 8 for 800 points. Who was Scoop Sanderson? Who did he work for? And where could you find him? Okay, well, there's your 8 questions for this month. Of course, people have been emailing me in their correct answers, and that's fantastic. Please do continue to do that. You can send them to disneybrit@hotmail.com. Once again, if you do that, I will be sending out a Disney Brit trivia DVD to anybody who gets all of those questions right, the first sort of person to hand them in, or, well, they may draw them out of a hat. So if you do think you've got those answers, do send all 8 in to me, and we'll let you know on the next episode of the podcast who it is who wins that Disney Brit trivia DVD.
Frederick Cody was one of the most colourful characters from the Wild West. Not only was he an American soldier, but he was also a showman. And it was his showmanship that he was most famous for and would create many shows with a cowboy theme. And it was for these shows that he was given the name he is better known as Buffalo Bill. And you wonder why on earth I am talking about the Wild West hero. Well, you join me backstage at Buffalo Bill's Wild West show as we meet Disneyland Paris' own Buffalo Bill, Trent Vance. So welcome, Trent.
Thank you.
Now, firstly, obviously there are people who may have seen the show, and there are people who listen to the show who have never been to Disneyland Paris. So can you tell us a little bit about what this show is about?
Well, originally the idea was to recreate the original Buffalo Bill's Wild West show that toured France and England and most of Europe at the beginning of the 1900s, I believe it was. And in the beginning, it pretty much adhered to that. They hired cowboys off of ranches. Myself, for example, I'm a ranch boy from Wyoming, which is one of the states, which is the state where Buffalo Bill founded his town. So, and it was to come over here and recreate the show in roughly its original form, but with a little bit of Disney production value added and modern production value.
Now, as a teenager, you worked for your family business in Wyoming.
I did.
Yeah. And you now find yourself, 25 years later, playing this Wild West hero in the middle of France in a place completely different to probably where you grew up. So how did you find yourself from there to here? What happened?
Well, everybody here has a different story. Mine was that I've always been involved at the same time as, being in a ranching business and the outfitting business with the family. I've also always been an amateur actor in high school and then in community theater. And at the time that I found this job, I was in Burbank, California, and I was auditioning, and I saw an advertisement in a casting calling newsletter and showed up. And as soon as I read what they wanted, I actually knew right then that I would probably get the job because it just described me. So, and then I came over here, and I didn't start out. I started out in a different role, and then I worked my way into Buffalo Bill's.
Oh, right. So you actually started in Buffalo Bill's doing something completely different.
Yeah.
So what other roles have you played in the show?
I played everything except the Indian. Well, and I even played the rescue relay and Sitting Bull, of course.
Okay.
Just walked out the door. So I started out actually as the doing the cowboy role, and then we have another position called the stunt role, which includes all of the speaking positions, other than the principal roles. So that's the cattle trail scene and the James Gang scene where they beat each other up, and and the clowns.
So have you been in the show from the beginning?
No, I got here in 95, and the show started in 92.
So you missed the first 3 years. So you've seen, what, possibly 3 other Buffalo Bills since you started?
Oh, there's, I don't know how many. When it started out with Peter McClain,
yeah,
and Bruce McEwen, I think, was doing it at the time I came, Steve Rally. There's been a couple guys who have came here, Duke Stroud, and another guy who has a name, Herman something, I can't remember. Probably maybe 10 people.
Okay. So 10 different Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
So Buffalo Bill obviously is a very famous, not character, he's a real person.
Yeah.
And each of those people will have played Buffalo Bill in a slightly different way.
Absolutely.
And obviously you will have seen some of those. Mm-hmm. What did you take from them and what have you created for your own to create your version of Buffalo Bill?
Most people around here, if you talk to them, they've been here from the beginning, would agree that Peter McLean was the quintessential Buffalo Bill.
Mm-hmm.
He had the hair, he had the grandeur, he had the big, gruff voice and attitude. And I was fortunate enough that when I actually landed here in Paris, they were in the middle of doing taping the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a videotape of him doing the show that I studied. And basically, I tried to imitate him the best I could. And my own limitations and my own personality leaked through, and it became mine. And then over the years, I've taken direction from different people, and I've learned how to use my voice more effectively. But in terms of specific things that I've chosen to do over the years, I mean, they're minute details that I'd have to think about for a while to tell you exactly what the differences are. But
okay, so it's been a sort of an evolving process,
yeah,
I suppose.
Absolutely.
Is your Buffalo now the same Buffalo you played when you first started, or is he different?
I think he's different.
Okay,
yeah.
How has he changed?
I'm a little bit older,
okay, yeah,
for one thing. I'm certainly a lot more comfortable in the role, I'm more at home playing the role of Buffalo Bill on this show probably than I am doing anything else in my life. It's just become, after that much repetition and that many times doing it, I've just tweaked little tiny moments here and there, mm-hmm, and learned how to use my voice. So it's just all around, I'm a lot more confident and I think competent, and my voice is matured, and I think I've really grown into the role from what other people have told me.
So obviously you play this character a lot. Well, you play twice a night, yeah, for, I don't know if it's five nights
half,
a week.
Half the shows.
So obviously you are Buffalo quite a lot of the time. So,
yeah,
you say your character's Buffalo has changed. Has that had an impact? Has any of Buffalo rubbed off on you?
Yeah, definitely. First off, because I made the choice to grow my hair out and my facial hair as well to look like the character, mm-hmm, so that I look like him now in my own personal life as well.
And you get funny looks because
of
that?
I do, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that combined with living in France and having an American accent when I speak French, or just speaking English among French people, I'm very quickly, very often recognized as playing Buffalo Bill on the show. So almost, I mean, if anyone the second that someone starts to recognize that, the conversation quickly falls into how it is it here and my whole entire life history that I've retold, I don't know how many hundreds of times, based on the fact that I'm playing Buffalo Bill. If I didn't have this facial hair and didn't have, you know, my hair grown out long and wasn't playing the role, then that conversation would never come up. So
yeah,
it's sort of this local notoriety that it's kind of fun to play with. So it's definitely changed my personal life.
And obviously, you were born in America, you grew up in America. You obviously now live in France. Does that mean you've had to learn the language? Have you learned the language? Do you use that every day?
Absolutely, yeah. Ironically, when I was in high school, we had to learn either Spanish or French. And for some reason, in Wyoming, I chose French.
Okay.
So there must have been some premonition way in the back of my mind that knew that I was eventually going to come over here. I didn't realize I was going to be moving over here and living here for 14 years and it being, you know, a third of my whole entire lifespan lived here. But it's been handy. So, yeah, I speak French pretty fluently.
Okay. Now, you say that you play Buffalo Bill half of the shows,
yeah,
during the week. And obviously you've been playing it for how many is it, 12 years, did you say?
Yeah, I believe so. Well, Buffalo Bill probably for about 10 years.
So 10 years.
Yeah.
So for some people to do the same thing every day over and over again twice for 10 years would be daunting, would probably get boring and tiresome.
Yeah.
How do you keep your performance fresh each time?
Every single show, and there's been over 11,000, is different.
Okay.
Because we have new cast, people who come in and fill in for people who are sick or whatever. The cast is a little bit different each night. It's a different mixture of people you're working with. And more importantly, the audience is different every night. And, of course, we're also working with live animals. So if you want it to be fresh every night, it is fresh. Mm. There's nothing you need to do to make it fresh. It's a brand new show every single night. And if you enter it with that frame of mind and you look for the moments that are different, or you at least leave yourself open to them, then it's a different show each night.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's here with itself.
Now, there is obviously a lot that goes on with creating this performance. You say cast come in and out. How many people roughly work on the show, do you know, altogether?
Yeah, cast or everybody?
Cast, crew, everybody.
I think there's about 300 people that work just
every
for
day.
Buffalo Bill's Wild West show. That includes the kitchen and the servers and the cast and the administration.
So it's a huge coordination effort.
Yeah. Or uncoordinated effort, I mean, depending on
now,
what your perspective is.
You obviously work in the evenings to do the shows. Give me a rough idea. What is your rough day for playing Buffalo Bill? How does your day work out? Do you rehearse during the day, or is it just the evenings that you come in? What
happens? At this point, I don't need to do any rehearsing, really.
Yeah.
What I do usually do, though, is on my drive to work, I'll rehearse. I'll repeat some of my first lines just to sort of feel what condition my voice is in,
yeah.
If I'm going to have to pamper it or if I can use it at full force or whatever. And I sing a little bit to myself to get myself warmed up. And then it's mainly just coming to work and meeting everybody and saying hello and seeing what the vibe is like down here at work, if there's some kind of tension going, tension backstage,
yeah.
And seeing who I'm working with as the principals, and then just getting in costume and putting on my makeup. I do my own makeup. We do a horse warm-up, and that's another time for conversation.
And what is that horse warm-up? Is that something you're involved in?
That's something that everyone who rides a horse in the show warms the horse up.
Okay.
At 5:45, I think, to 6 o'clock. So that's just riding around in the arena. We usually talk amongst ourselves as we're riding together, and you know, and that's about it. And then I come backstage, and we usually have a little bit of a break. Sometimes I eat or take a nap or whatever seems to be the thing that I need to do. Put on my makeup and, you know, on with the show.
And what happens then? Obviously, you have your horse warm-up. What happens if you have a horse that's unresponsive that evening or there's a problem with it? How is that resolved? Do you have spare horses that you can use, or is it you do?
There are at least two horses trained to play Buffalo Bill, because each Buffalo Bill has their own horse, and there's two main guys who play Buffalo Bill. And I think there's a third one who also can, a third horse that also has done the show. So if there's a problem with my horse, maybe he's lame or whatever, which sometimes happens, then they just put me on the other horse. And it's a bit of an adjustment, because horses can be very different in temperament in the way they do it. But I've been able to manage if there's a change.
And I've been lucky to be here for a little while now, and I've seen sort of people getting ready, and in your dressing room you have a huge array of costumes, and you had your dresser was in with you earlier and came in and were putting these finishing touches to your clothing. I think it was a watch, I think she put on just as you were about to leave.
Some straps,
that was what it was. How much does your costume help you with your character?
Helps me a lot. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I don't know, I think probably the costume gets me into the role very much. If not the costume, the makeup as well. And together, definitely, they put me in the form of a Buffalo. I mean, the boots are a critical part of my costume.
Just for the people who obviously listen to the show, these boots are immense. They go right up over the knee. They've got spurs on the back. They're real deal. And they're quite a hefty piece of kit, really, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
And do you have a certain piece of clothing that when you finally put that on, you are Buffalo?
Yeah, that's the boots.
The boots.
Yeah, definitely the boots. And the big buckle, I think, as well. The gun belt really is the finishing thing.
And is that heavy?
It's heavy, yeah, because they're real 357 magnums
that
have been adjusted so that they can shoot blanks. But, I think that's probably, I said the boots, that's one of the parts. But as soon as you put the guns on and you have that weight hang on you, it just, you feel big and your character is enormous. So that's true, the guns are probably the finishing thing.
Okay, so obviously there's a big change to the show recently, the introduction of Disney characters, which we'll come on to in a little while.
Okay.
But before that, has the show changed much to you in the past 10 or so years that you've been doing? Has it been the same show for 10 years, or has there been adjustments, or how has it changed?
There have been tiny scenes. We've changed the rodeo games, and the rodeo games, we've changed one of the games, or we've changed the order of the games. Sometimes the cattle trail scene changes a lot depending on who's working, because a lot of it is improvised. But nothing major structurally, nothing's changed since the beginnings that I know of.
And they have the cowboy games at the end, which obviously has an unknown quantity amount that happens to it, because anybody can win. Yeah. Who's the best team? Which color?
It used to be that the Gold Star team was always sort of the best team. I don't know why. That was the way that they stacked the riders and the horses together. It seemed the Gold Star team often was the one that won. But now, I don't know. It might still be the Gold. I haven't really paid that much attention over the years.
Okay, here's a question. You got to think about this one. We say the show has changed recently. The show has changed slightly over the years. If you could change one thing to the show, if there's one thing you think, oh, it'd be brilliant if we could put that in, what would it be that you would change?
Wow, that's a big question. Well, the part of the show that they did change most is the cattle trail scene. And before they put the change in that's in place now, that was the scene that needed the most work. So if I was to do anything, and I would have done what they did, which was go back and change the cattle trail scene, and rewrite it and reform it and make it a more just a stronger scene. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I would have put Disney characters in, but they did, and that's where we are. So it's interesting. I think it works for the Disney public.
Because of the slight change in the way that it's been put together, has the audience's reaction changed over 17 years of the show being or 15 years or 12 years or so that you've been doing it? Has the audience reaction changed at all, or do they still laugh at the same things, or do they still find the same things entertaining?
I think overall, it's pretty much the same laughs in the same spots, or the same moments have the same strength. But that also really depends on who's in the cast on any given night. You know, who's playing Buffalo Bill, who's playing Annie Oakley, who's playing Auguste, who's playing Sitting Bull, and the makeup of the cast among the Cowboys and Indians. Because there are some real strong characters in the Cowboy and Indian cast, and combinations can have a lot of fun out there on stage, and they can make the show completely different. So it's not so much places in the show that have changed as different combinations of the cast really can make a difference. I've seen that for sure.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to draw to a close this sort of section of the interview, because what we're going to do for our listeners at home who are listening, we're actually going to bring this interview to them in two sections, and we're going to bring this one on this week's show, and then what we're going to do is on next week's show we're going to bring another part of the interview with Trent Vance. So thank you for now, Trent, and we'll come back to you a bit later.
Okay.
Doing the top seven must-sees of Walt Disney World for some time now, and we're finally at the point where we've reached the last of our new topics. This one, the top seven must-sees of the rest of Walt Disney World, you guys have given your suggestions and you've voted on, and you've now got your top seven must-sees of the rest of Walt Disney World. So we're going to give you your top seven. We have a bit of a discussion about them, and then we're going to explain to you as to what's going to happen to all of the top sevens that we've had so far. So, top seven for the rest of Walt Disney World then. So, starting off in seventh position, I think it's possibly one of my favourite places to visit in the evening, I suppose. It's not the cheapest place to visit, but it is a lovely place, and that is, in number seven, California Grill, on top of the Contemporary. Great food, great view of the Magic Kingdom, and if you're there at the right time, the fireworks as well.
This is, it's absolutely incredible, as you say. Very expensive,
yeah,
but certainly worth every penny. And there's a better view around, other than being in the park, and probably in some ways it's a better view than that of being stood on top of the Contemporary and watching it.
Yeah, it's a very, very different view from the top of the Contemporary, because of the angle that you're watching it from. You actually realise just how few of the fireworks actually go off directly behind the castle.
Oh, the miles away when you look at it.
They are miles away, and then suddenly you realise just how far away a lot of them are. Some of them are actually fired off behind Fantasyland, and you can see that when you watch it from the top of the Contemporary. So that's your number seven, California Grill. So number six then. Well, it seems that we're staying with the food theme for this one as well. And that number six is a place that's not particularly large, but is found within the Beach Club. And it is... I really like it. Beaches and Cream, a place that you've visited a few times?
We have been there several times. Well renowned for the kitchen sink.
Yeah. Can you explain to everybody what the kitchen sink is if they've not actually eaten it?
The kitchen sink, which was quite a surprise when we heard about it and then we ordered it, you don't realise how big it is. It's actually a sink.
Yeah.
Absolutely full of ice cream, Oreos, any kind of syrup. There's bananas in there. Anything you could put in an ice cream, it's there.
It's every flavour, every topping, everything, isn't it?
Just and we're talking a serious amount of ice cream.
Yeah. There's some of the great ones there. No Way Jose is another particularly good ice cream. But it's a nice little place to go. Quite difficult to get into. You need to sort of make sure you book in advance because it is quite small.
It is very small, but incredibly popular. With everyone knows about it. And the burgers and stuff are great as well. It's not, you know, a luxurious setting by any stretch of the imagination. You know, you're perched on sort of like 1950s style bar chairs. And be prepared if you order the kitchen sink that the lights do flash. And it's like, ooh.
Yeah, they make a big thing about it, don't they? Like in Rainforest Cafe, they do the volcano. Yeah. They do the same thing with the kitchen sink.
But enough to feed five.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Okay, moving on to number five. Look at that. Beautifully linked.
Segue.
This is the first one on this list, which is completely free. You can do this, and it doesn't cost you a single penny. And this is something that has dated back to the very, very beginning of Walt Disney World. It's been going for years and years, and it's still free to watch. And it happens on Bay Lake. It happens around... you can stand around Bay Lake to watch this. And it is the Electrical Water Pageant, a show that is... a bit like, I suppose you could call it, a Main Street Electric Parade on water. It has music linked to it that comes directly from the boats themselves. And it's something that's really nice to watch at the end of the day. It usually goes off around 9 p.m, doesn't it?
It is, and you can see it from most resorts down there in Bay Lake. And it's nice, and I'd recommend anyone who gets the chance to go and see it. It's bizarre how many people don't know about it, especially UK visitors. And you say it's completely free, and it's great. It's like listening to sort of Spectrum-style music again and stuff like that. And you can catch it. I mean, if you're sitting on the beach waiting for Wishes or something like that, you can catch that sometimes before Wishes, and then just stay around and see it straight after.
So you can actually... You can have a free evening, I suppose, go sit on the Polynesian beach, you can watch the Electrical Water Pageant, and then turn around and watch Wishes afterwards. Okay, number four then. This one is a really interesting one, because it's just a swimming pool, but it's a swimming pool with a difference. And at number four, you have put the Typhoon Lagoon Wave Pool, which is a sight to behold, really. It's, I suppose, one of the biggest swimming pools or lagoons with inland. Has waves that come up to around 6 foot. Before the park actually opens in the morning, people are able to go in and surf on them. And you've sort of said that this is definitely a must-see while you're at Walt Disney World.
I think it's incredible. Both water parks, that's the one I like the most. The pool's absolutely incredible. You know, I'm a bit of a wuss because I don't go swimming. Some people, my eldest is one that wants to go swimming right out, and I won't go that far out with it. But it's absolutely incredible. And even if you're sort of way back, it hits you with the force.
And it really does hit you with the force. And here's something we did we found quite entertaining, which was buy yourself an underwater camera, go out into the depths of the water and turn yourself around so you can't see the waves, brace yourself for it, and the other person who's got the camera, get them ready to take the photo the moment the wave hits. We've got some fantastic photos of us just being taken out by a huge 6 foot wave. Didn't drown, I'm still here, it's all good. So that's number four then. Number three, another one I suppose again is free really for you to do, and it's a lot of people when they gave us suggestions in the first place, said to ride the monorail, just to get on the monorail and ride round. But you voted at number three, actually travelling through the centre of the Contemporary on the monorail was something that was definitely a must-see. And if you're travelling to the parks from the Transportation and Ticket Centre, you're going to get that experience anyway.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's so specific, because, you know, the monorail itself is great.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Contemporary's, it's one of those bizarre ones. It's a building I'm not particularly enamoured with. But it is nice and very weird to go through, and then there's everyone there, you can see people eating, shopping, whatever. And it's, I suppose really it's because it's such a unique experience, just to go trundling through someone's hotel.
And also, one thing that people may not know about is this idea of being able to sit at the front of the monorail.
Yeah.
And actually that will give you a fantastic view. If you do want to sit at the front of the monorail. When you get to the monorail station, you need to speak to the cast member and tell them that you'd like to sit at the front. And if there aren't people already queuing for the front, then you're able to do that. It's a fantastic experience. The cast member who actually pilots the monorail is usually really friendly, and you also get a monorail's pilot license.
Pilot's license.
And because you're sat at the front of the monorail, you obviously have no restrictions. You have an entire window in front of you, and you can see everything. And as you go into the Contemporary, you just get the panoramic view in front of you as you travel through.
You might have to wait one or two goes at that, but once you're up there, if another family's in there, wait till next time round. I think you're allowed four at the front at one time.
Yeah, I think that's
I think we have to split us family five to come round.
Yeah.
When I did it, it just chucked down with rain.
So you just got splattered rain everywhere. Number two, then. So we're getting close to your number one. No, your number two was a store, and it's strange to think that one of the must-sees, you say you must go into this shop, but I think it is a sight to behold before you go in. It is the largest Disney store in the world. It is the World of Disney down at Disney Marketplace, and I think this place, you really could get lost in it, couldn't you?
Yeah, and I think you're right from what you're saying there. It's a theming outside as well. Mm. I'm trying to think of all the characters that are outside there.
There's a Stitch that spits water
Stitch
on you.
Stitch that spits at you constantly, which is really funny for people who come out of the shop who don't realise why these kids are stood there. So you get the pirate area inside is really nicely themed. It is a massive shop. Don't take your credit cards in it, whatever you do.
And, you know, it's actually so big, you can have a personal shopper service.
Yeah.
People who actually know where things are, go in, ask for them, it's completely free, and they will take you around and find the things that you need. There's things, there's animatronics in there, there's the pirate themed area, there's a princess themed area, there's the Bibbidi Bobbidi boutique in there as well, there's jewellery area.
Sounds like Generation Game, this.
It is a little bit.
Household.
Cuddly toy. So there's loads of stuff in there, and pretty much almost not everything, but almost anything you're looking for in Walt Disney World, you can probably find it in the World of Disney down at Disney Marketplace. So, moving on to your final number one.
Drum roll.
This is a big one. It wasn't one specific area of this place that you chose. You sort of chose the whole area itself. And that whole area is Disney's Boardwalk. That was your number one must-see of the rest of Walt Disney World. I suppose a nighttime attraction in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the whole area, I mean, it's bizarre because at the moment we're sat at the lighthouse looking back on Newport Bay here, which is very similar to the Boardwalk Beach and Yacht Club. And I don't know what it is about the whole New England theme and Boardwalk at night, especially just to sit. I've spent an evening, I just sat there doing nothing but eat pizza and corn dogs.
Yeah.
And I had a fantastic evening.
And I think the thing is with the Boardwalk, it's got that classic sort of New England turn of the century feel, but at the same time, it caters to a lot of people. You've got sort of upper class restaurants like Spoodles.
Yeah.
You've got the ESPN zone for your sports fans.
Takeaway pizzas.
You've got takeaway pizzas. You've got the Atlantic Dance Hall.
Yeah.
You've also got jelly rolls as well. And, you know, you've got the lake there. You've got the boats that take you to Epcot, which you can jump on.
Yeah.
So it really does cater for a lot of people, I think.
I think it's almost like Main Street, we know the love's there because it's that old tradition that people are trying to grab hold of still. Mm. That's the way we want to be. And I think Boardwalk does exactly that. It's that New England boardwalky feel that we all still really would like to have.
Yeah.
And you do not get in your day-to-day life.
Yeah, definitely. So there is your top seven must-sees of the rest of Walt Disney World. Well, that means now that we have a top seven for Magic Kingdom, Animal Kingdom, Hollywood Studios, Epcot, and the rest of Walt Disney World.
Should we finish them?
We've not quite finished. What we're going to do is to find out what is the top seven of the whole of Walt Disney World. And you should find on the WDisneyW.com forums, go to www.wdisneyw.com/forums, and go to the Disney Brit section, and there's going to be a new poll. And that poll is going to stay there for a month. We're going to keep it up for a good length of time. And that poll will include every top seven item you have chosen so far from each one. And what you've got to do is to go on and choose your top seven from all of those top sevens. You can only choose seven. And at the end of that month, we're going to gather everything together and we're going to announce your top seven of Walt Disney World. This is your ultimate top seven. If you go to Walt Disney World, these are the seven things you must do or die.
There will be food.
There will be food, yeah. So go over to the forums now where you listen to this. It should be up.
Yeah.
And go and find those things and go get voting, and we'll bring you the results in a month's time.
Well, hey.
Having recently been out to Disneyland Paris, we decided that we were going to bring back a few things for you guys, and we've sort of created a bit of a prize package that you can win. So we're going to have a bit of a trivia contest, and the way it's going to work is that we have four questions that we're going to get you to try and answer, and we've also got a bonus question for you to try and win yourself, that extra bonus item. So I'm going to give you the questions to these four, and then if you think you know what the answers are, then you need to send your answers to disneybrit@hotmail.com. And you're going to have until May the 24th to hand these in. So we're going to give you a good while, nearly a month, to sort of get these answers together, because some of them are a little bit tricky and some of them are going to require you doing some searching. So let's go through the questions then. So here are your four main questions. So question one is this. Name the two arcades that run the length of Disneyland Paris's Main Street, USA. I'll read that again. So question one is, name the two arcades that run the length of Disneyland Paris's Main Street, USA. Question two is this. According to the bins of Disneyland Paris's Main Street, who maintains the litter? So according to the bins of Disneyland Paris's Main Street, who maintains the litter? Question three, which British lyricist is a European Disney legend? So listen again. Which British lyricist is a European Disney legend? Question four then, final question. I'm going to read you the question and I'm going to give you a clue as to where you can find the answer, and it's this. Who was the winner of the Disney Brit first annual Buzz Lightyear Laser Blast competition? Welcome. So listen again. Who was the winner of the Disney Brit first annual Buzz Lightyear Laser Blast competition? Now, you could think, we've not mentioned this before. Well, this was a little contest that myself and Juz had when we were out in Disneyland Paris. And while we were there, we created a bit of a video diary, I suppose, which is going to be available on our website. So it's not going to be until this video is up that you're going to be able to answer this question. The video should be up sort of within a week or so of this podcast going live. So it looks sort of beginning of May, you should be able to find the answer. So who out of the two of us was the winner of the Disney Brit first annual Buzz Lightyear Laser Blast competition? So your bonus question then, and this will be for a bonus prize, and this is the question. What date was Disneyland Paris's City Hall founded? So what date was Disneyland Paris's City Hall founded? So I need to know the year, what date. And so if you can sort of answer all of those questions, you think you can at least answer those four, then please do send in your answers, like I say, at disneybrit@hotmail.com. I'm going to let you know the prize package you can win. And it is the following. This is your prize package. It will be a Disneyland Paris park map. There'll be a Mickey's Magical Party pen. We're so good to you. A Stitch Live pin. It's the obviously a pin you can only get if you go out to Disneyland Paris. There's also something that we said in the beginning of the news that we were going to try and pick up, and we did manage to get one, and it is a Mickey's Magical Party CD. And I'm just going to grab the bag here, and I'm going to let you know what is on the CD. Here we go. So there are three different tracks. There's the Mickey's Magical Party Time, there's the Mickey's Magical Party Time Instrumental, and there's Mickey's Magical Party Time Remix. So three different tracks on there. And we're going to send them all out in a Mickey's Magical Party Disneyland Resort Paris bag. Now, bonus prize. If you get that bonus question as well, we're also going to send you out a Disney Brit Trivia DVD. So not only can you get the maps, the pen, the pin, the CD, you can also get yourself a Disney Brit Trivia DVD. So just a reminder, send us an email at disneybrit@hotmail.com and we'll see who's the winner on the May the 27th, I think it is, show. Well, that pretty much rounds up episode 14 of the podcast. Of course, I want to say a big thank you to our sponsors, Attraction Tickets Direct and Complete Orlando. You can find them at www.attraction-tickets-direct.co.uk and www.completeorlando.co.uk. Thanks again to Juz for joining me and especially joining me out in Disneyland Paris. We will, of course, have much, much more to come from Disneyland Paris. We did do an awful lot out there. Didn't do many rides, but we did get an awful lot of stuff done for the show. Be sure to check out some of the photos from our recent trip over on the Disneyland Paris over on Facebook. They will certainly be appearing. And do please make sure you check out the DisneyBrit.com website, where we will be posting our video diary from our trip. Certainly going to be some entertaining things in there. That should be appearing over the next week. Please, please, please do go and check that out and let us know what you think. A huge, huge thank you to Trent Vance and everyone over at the Buffalo Bill Wild West show in Disney Village. Thank you for allowing me to visit them backstage and to interview Trent. And just to see what goes on back there. Of course, don't forget to send us emails, your comments, questions, suggestions. You can send them to disneybrit@hotmail.com. We would like to do another listener email show again soon, so please do send your emails in so we can include them. Of course, you can still follow us over at Facebook. You can friend up me and Juz. Make sure you also come over to Twitter to the Disney Brit and Mouse Meets Twitter pages. You can sign up there for updates on news. Some more things over on Facebook. Of course, you can join the Disney Brit and the Mouse Meet group. They're still going on. There's also a brand new group you've got to come and join over there, and that is the I Am a Disney Pod Person group, which has started up. Seems to be a lot of people joining that, so do please come over and join the Pod Person group over there. As you heard, we brought you the last of our top seven with the rest of Walt Disney World. And that means all of our top sevens are going to be put together to create a poll for you to vote on your final top seven of Walt Disney World, your ultimate top seven of Walt Disney World. You've got a month in which to go over and do that, and we're going to bring you the results. And you need to go over to our forums, which are www.wdisneyw.com/forums. And in the World of Disney section, you'll find the Disney Brit section. You'll be able to vote over there, as well as leave us some nice messages and join in with the chats that people are having over there. Don't forget, of course, to leave us a review on iTunes. People are still doing that, and it's greatly appreciated. Thank you. It really does allow people to know what the show's like before they arrive. As I've already said, you can go over to the DisneyBrit.com website. You can see the video over there and any other information that we post. Don't forget to still continue to sign up for Mouse Meet. You can do that at www.disneybrit.com/mousemeets.asp. Some great stuff for Mouse Meets. Again, while we're out in Disneyland Paris, found out some great things. Stayed at the Newport Bay Club, which is going to be the base for Mouse Meets. Fantastic hotel. Absolutely wonderful hotel. Had a fantastic time there. Thank you to those of you who have donated to the show in the past couple of weeks. It is really appreciated, all of the help you give us. And don't forget that episode 15 of the podcast is going to be released on the 13th of May, Wednesday the 13th of May. As again, of course, we release them on a Wednesday. So really, that's it from me until episode 16. I hope you have a good couple of weeks, and I'll see you.